My name is Neil Christensen. I'm a development lead for in the storage and file systems group, and my specific responsibility is that I lead the NTFS file system team. What I'm going to talk about today is a recently released protocol document called MSFSA for File System Algorithms. It is a project that we did inside of Microsoft, which I led the development of this document. And so we're just going to briefly talk about it for a few minutes here. Just to give you a little background, before we did MSFSA, as the other protocol documents were being developed, it became obvious to us that there are certain file system semantics that are exposed through the protocols, through the various SMB protocols. And we made the decision that we didn't want to replicate that in each of the protocol documents. And so what we did initially is there were very specific questions around certain behaviors. And so our first attempt at addressing this is we developed a document called the FSBO, the File System Behavior Overview, which is available on MSDN. It does have some very useful information in it. And that document answered very specific questions around Windows file system behavior. And this is a list of the topics that it covered. And these were actually some important topics that we had asks for around exactly how op locks work, exactly how byte range locks, how file deletion works, how timestamps actually function inside the Windows file system, because there has been issues with people trying to implement their own server in some of these scenarios. But there was a problem. There was a couple problems with how we developed the document. And then number one was that it was written to a file system developer's point of view. It talked about ERPs and fast I/O operations. And these are probably things that you guys don't even know what they are, or there may be some of you, but for the most part, people probably don't know what these are, but they're basically, it was very detailed around the I/O model inside of Windows. And one of the feedback points we got is that is not very useful. We're protocol guys. We see SMB packets. We see the wire. We have no idea what an ERP is inside of Windows, and we don't care. The next issue is it really didn't provide an exhaustive overview of how Windows functioned. It was very targeted around specific topics. And more importantly, is that even though we did in FSBO, we actually gave a list of errors returned by the various operations. It didn't give the why. It did not describe why a given error was detected. And again, for people trying to develop their own server, they really wanted to understand the why it was a why a given error was generated and returned. So what we did is we started a new project. FSBO is out there, and it's good in its current form. There is a group of people that it's very useful for, so we're going to continue to maintain that. But what we decided was to develop a new document called MSFSA. It's an informative reference, which basically describes the communication between a server and its underlying object store. It is referenced by the three SMB protocol specs. And what's important is that it contains an abstract data model to describe how a file system operates, how the object store, I will sort of use object store and file system interchangeably. From an abstract point of view, it is an object store. It provides a list of common, it has sort of a library in it up at the beginning of it. And by the way, these numbers out here to the right are reference numbers into FSA itself. If you go out to the web and grab a copy, which you can see the address, and look at these numbers, it'll cover these exact topics. So I threw these in the slides just to make it easier for right now. No promise that the numbers won't change in the future, but it works today. It describes a library of common algorithms across various operations because we really needed that. And more importantly, it describes approximately 110 wire visible operations, and it gives details around how those operations operate. And it is at a high level in the sense that it's the top layer of Windows file systems and how they operate. For example, it doesn't, in an NTFS example, NTFS is a journaled file system. It doesn't dig into the underlying of how it makes things consistent and robust, but it gives you information on how parameters are parsed, how the high-level processing of the operations are, and the basic algorithms for the operations that it covers. And it was developed by multiple members of the file system team. What it does not contain are operations that are not supported remotely, so it doesn't have any details around operations that are not exposed across the wire. And it does not show the impact of local operations on remote operations. A couple of good examples is TXF, and for those of you that don't know what that is, this was introduced in Vista. It's transactional semantics at a file system level. TXF is not supported across the wire. So we don't have any coverage of if there were a transaction in flight and someone tries to do something, what that would mean. And again, it's because this is for people trying to develop their own server, and they're not probably going to have TXF in there because it's not available to them. Another example is impacts of local memory map files on remote accesses, things like that. Again, we were only describing wire-visible behavior. MSFSCC, which is a document that's been out there a while, it's an important supporting document because it's the one that describes all the structures. And again, if you've looked at the protocol the SMB protocol documents, you see that they reference FSCC for describing all the packet parameters and the structures for FS controls or information classes. We use it heavily as well because it was already documented. Why duplicate that information? And that's also available at this point. So that is a little history around FSA and what it is. And so what I want to talk about for a few minutes, and if anyone has a question, feel free to ask. But what I want to talk about is give some examples of useful information that might be in there that you might find valuable if you're trying to implement your own server. Windows has this concept called name tunneling. It was a concept added back in the early days of Windows, like Windows 95 on the 9X line, and then Windows NT 3.5 when Windows was very young. Windows NT was very young. Its purpose was we had short names and long names, and long names was a new concept in the system, and there were applications that didn't understand short and long names. Or there were many applications that didn't understand long names, only understood short names. So if you created this long file name and then had an app like Word that only understood short names, you would lose that long name. So we implemented this thing called name tunneling, and its purpose is to tunnel certain attributes to maintain a correlation between these things. This functionality is still in Windows today. We've never been able to get rid of it, even though these old apps are long dead and we don't care about them. But it's important to understand when you're trying to emulate how the file systems work, you need to understand this concept. And so these are, typically we tunnel at both create time and rename time, and also we deal with tunneling at close time. And these are, again, references into the document about where you can get information on this. But it gives a detailed description of how tunneling works, when we tunnel information and when we get information out of the tunnel cache, which is all maintained in memory. One of the nice features of the NTFS file system is a change journal. It's called the USN journal. It's really nice because it allows applications to efficiently know which files are changing on the system. The USN journal is available through the wire protocol. And so we have documented how the USN journal works. And most importantly, if you're trying to emulate this, we've documented details around when in the code journal entries are generated and the reason. And there is this bitmask of high-level reasons specified. And you can see in MSFSCC what those different reasons are. And we give all the entry points in the system where those things are generated. Another good example if you're trying to emulate these things. Alternate data streams. Windows has the ability, or NTFS has the ability, to have multiple data streams on a given file. feature that's been in there since Windows NT, since NTFS itself was first developed. Surprisingly enough, people don't understand some of the weird interactions that it has, which are now visible through MSFSA. A very simple example is when you create a new file, you can create a new file giving an alternate data stream name. You can just, essentially what it looks like is you're creating an alternate data stream. And the system will automatically create a default data stream when you do that. And a lot of people don't understand how that works. And so this describes that syntax. What's also important is that MSFSCC has been updated to describe the naming syntax associated with alternate data streams, attribute names, things like this. And so there's a nice, in this section, there's a nice description of all the different names, valid characters, all of those things are actually well specified now. Rename of alternate data streams is another unusual concept that is hard to get right. There's actually the ability to do a superseding rename of one stream or over another. You can rename the primary data stream to something else, to an alternate data stream. These are concepts that are built in the file system that most people don't know about. This now describes all those semantics in this section. And the fact is, when you rename a primary data stream to something to an alternate data stream, it automatically generates a new primary data stream. Because the model is, it always has to be there. The default data stream must always be present. And then we also talk about how alternate data streams can be deleted and how they interact with deletion of the primary data stream. Again, described in this section. Deleting files has always been interesting. This is one of the sections that we've had questions from people is how delete actually works in Windows. It is different than Unix, how it works. And the algorithms around how that work are described in various places. The most interesting thing that gets people is that in the Windows environment, is that the name is not removed from the namespace until the last handle is closed to the file and it's actually deleted. The name stays present. Now, there can be situations where you still can't open it, but if you enumerate a directory, it will still show up. And again, all those semantics are described. And FSBO actually has a very nice, detailed description of how delete works. One of the important differences between FSBO and FSA is that FSA takes it on an operation-by-operation basis. And if you're looking at something like delete, which is present across multiple operations, I mean, you can specify deletion at creation time, you can specify, there's a set information class to, set file information class to say I want to delete the file. There is, it's not actually processed until close. It's spread out over the document. You have to know what you're sort of looking for from an FSA perspective. You have to look through the different places that impact it, which is why I gave these references. The nice thing about FSBO is it gives a topic overview. And that is the difference between these two topics. This is a per operation description. FSBO is a per topic description. And so in that one sense, they do complement each other. Byte range locks, another feature supported by all of our Windows file systems. It is functionally different than how Unix works in that we do support both shared and exclusive locks. And the locks are mandatory, not advisory. It will enforce them. Now, you can make a call, you can make a choice. You can either wait for a range to become available or fail the request immediately, so you don't have to wait. But all locks in the system are mandatory. And again, you can see information on how it works in read and write. You can see how locks are removed. Locks are basically per stream. And in the document, there is this concept that we call a stream. Because Windows supports, since the Windows file system model supports multiple data streams, we describe that there's files and then there's streams on files. And then there's names associated with the stream, with these different streams. And again, that abstract data model is all laid out. Now, surprisingly enough, in the abstract data model, every time we tried to deviate from actually how the structures inside the NTFS file system work, we found that it didn't work. we couldn't describe it right. So it actually is surprisingly close to the actual implementation from a high-level structural point of view of how Windows is actually, or how NTFS is actually organized. Oh, another interesting one is that we support zero-length ranges. It has an interesting semantic, and you can see the algorithm around that in that section. Directory change notification, another wire-visible feature of the Windows file systems. What's valuable in FSA, if you're trying to emulate this functionality, is that we have this common algorithm routine in this section here for describing how we insert or how we do the notification of change directory. And what you can do is you can look through the through FSA for all the references to this guy, and you can see all the trigger points where we trigger these points so you can properly emulate it and provide the same type of functionality. Valid data length. Windows has an interesting, or NTFS, Windows in general, because all the file systems actually support the concept. NTFS file system actually supports the concept of valid data length persistently. Most file systems that you've looked at or seen support two concepts. They have an allocation size, which is the physical size of a given file, and then the file size, or EOF, whatever you want to call it, which is the logical size of the file. Well, we have this extra field called valid data length, which is the portion of the file which has been written. The reason we implemented valid data length when NTFS was designed and when all the file systems were designed, because FAT actually supports the concept in memory, is if someone's extending a file, we don't want to expose the underlying data on the disk. And so normally what a file system has to do is if I just set EOF out at 1 meg or something, is I have to write 1 meg of zeros out there to preserve the security, to not expose the old data on the disk drive. To eliminate that write, we implemented this concept called VDL, and it's just a watermark of where we've written in the file, and there can be lots of allocated data after it, but if you read beyond VDL, it returns zeros. And so you can look at the read algorithm and see how VDL is implemented. You can look at write and see how we move VDL as we do writes to the file that are beyond VDL. And then there's also a command to explicitly set VDL out. And it talks about the security involved with that. That is actually in Windows, you have to be a privileged user to move VDL out manually because you're exposing someone else's data on the disk when you do this. And so again, it has to be a secure operation. And this is all described algorithmically inside the document. Oops, I don't know what just happened. There we go. Oplocks. Now, oplocks are a little different. All the other things I've been talking about are things that an application on a client machine would use going through the remote protocol to communicate then to the server, and the server would perform the operation and give the information back. Oplocks are actually a protocol between the SMB server and the file system, and between the client and server, and then the server to the file system itself. We have very detailed information on how oplocks work. The guy that developed them and wrote this section of the document actually did an amazingly good, detailed job. One of the interesting things that it covers is the new granular oplocks that were introduced in Windows 7. And so those are all well documented and laid out and how they fit into this system. Oplocks are granted per stream. So in other words, if I have a file with multiple data streams, I can have separate oplocks on each stream. It describes how oplocks are broken, the algorithms around it, and the handshake between the object store and the server on that machine, and how they negotiate breaking and requesting oplocks. And again, if you just want a high level, if you need to get your head around oplocks and how they work, and you need a high level overview, FSBO actually contains a very good high level overview of oplocks as a whole, because the oplocks inside FSA are spread across the different operations that may break them. Again, you can search for this and find the places that break oplocks. For example, They can be broken at write. They can be broken at create. They can be broken on rename. They can be broken with byte range locks. So all these things, you can search for that and find those things. And it will provide that level of information and detail for you. Up to this point, those were the examples and the thoughts that I wanted to... those are examples of operations that are useful in FSA, or just examples of interesting areas that I thought about. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Tom for a few minutes. He's going to talk about what we call our torque converter, which is how we modified the existing protocol documents to reference FSA. And then after Tom is done, we will open it up to questions and any thoughts that you have or anything you'd like to know.